a little bit ahead, because it's one thing that is not clear from the
radio. Did you meet Mitchell?
Back on that. Yeah, I'd like to skip ahead just to follow that particular point again, because I wanted to ask about the Argentine reaction to the British draft interim agreement, which was issued on the 17th of May, I believe. Shortly after that, you, Dr. Costa Mendes, were in New York and at the Security Council made an extensive statement in which you pointed out that the British draft had a series of no's in it, so to speak, no to Argentinian movement to the island, no to the elimination of the old form of administration and so forth. But you also raised there, you suggested, I think, in your remarks that the question of the wishes of the inhabitants of the Malvinas was, in fact, still a major negative point that the British were making, whereas actually there was no reference to this in the British draft of May the 17th. In fact, it makes a reference to an earlier UN document in which the reference is to the interests of colonial people. My question here is, did you not detect any change in the British position on this as a result of the wording of their draft interim agreement?
Frankly, I didn't. And I relied in this problem very much on my advices. I will tell you something. Perhaps in one of my many mistakes, on this occasion in life, is to be too personal and be incapable of delegating enough. No? But in this particular case of United Nations regulations and charter and interpretation of documents, I relied very much on Ambassador Ross, who had very long experience in Malvinas because he was in London in 1968, and in the United Nations because he's a man that really loves the United Nations, had faith in it. In Candiotti, who was a lawyer, a very good lawyer, and also a man that has been connected with the United Nations. So they were really professional people, among the very few professional people that Ministerio has. So I relied very much on them connection with this document, and I relied very much on my own experience and intuition, so looking at the document from a political point of view, when he said, other people is abandoning the self-determination principle. Why? And how? So the reference to Article 73,
yes,
made our people, my people and myself, doubt about the possibility of the existence of a real change in the mind of the, in the British mind.
So the
we thought that they had switched to Sentry for cosmetic reasons, perhaps, for procedure. But not because they were abandoning the idea of a consultation to the people of the islands as the last resort and as the...
So that this remained, in your perception and the perception of the Argentine government, a continuing hindrance to an interim agreement.
Could you repeat the question?
This question of the wishes of the islanders remain, in your perception, a continuing hindrance to an interim agreement?
Yes, I think that this problem of the wishes of the settled and the determination principle had been, and it still is, the main stumbling block. Our perception was that the British could not, at that moment, abandon that principle. And this is why we were trying to search ways of postponing the definite agreement of the definite... because Hague had failed only because of that. All the thing is nothing, garbage. The real thing is the self-determination problem. The Belaunde proposition had failed because of that, even if it was better than the Hague, the last Hague proposition, because it didn't insist on the the restitution of the prisoner colonies. Of course, there is the Belgrano incident, which is a problem about it. And we were very optimistic about the Pérez Cuellar negotiations because we thought that we could make good progress without putting the sovereignty and the self-determination problems as initial decisions or as initial issues.
But you didn't see the...
The advice I received and the conviction I myself made was that this problem had not been satisfactorily overcome in that time.
I see. Now just to another question.
Is this clear, Virginia?
Yes, it is clear, but I think the one thing is missing and be interesting was that when you discussed with your advisors the British proposal of the 17th of May, you were also psychologically acting under the great insecurity of the trip of Parsons and Andersons to England on the 13th of May, and the fact that they had frozen the negotiation with Pérez de Cuellar for over 3 days, and that was so similar to the Hague that you mentioned. At the last minute, the Hague also froze exactly in the same manner the proposals in April. And when he came back with a proposal 4 days later, he had added the referendum and the wishes of the islanders.
Whenever the problem, the point concerning the wishes of the self-determination problem was reached, something happened in every negotiation.
Yeah.
Well, that leads exactly to my next question, because the British proposal...
Because, for example,
yeah.
Mrs. Kirkpatrick, who was and is a good friend of us, not of mine because he quarreled with me with no arguments, but that's a part. I like her very much, and I think that she's a first-class lady and a first-class diplomat. And first-class historian, but it's about. She never realized it, and she said, this document is marvelous. You should accept it without doubts. You won't have any problem now. Who gives the guarantee? Will you give me a written guarantee that the United States says that there is no problem concerning the self-determination principle? Which was the same question that I had put to Mr. Haig a month before.
That leads me to another question, a little bit out of order here, but of Mrs. Kirkpatrick and of the Argentine representation in New York at this stage. Because, of course, Ambassador Ross, Ambassador Roca, and a small team were the ones who were conducting the mediation talks with the Secretary General. But there appeared to be, at least from the perspective of the Secretary General's office, another group of Argentine representatives who were, in fact, dealing with Mrs. Kirkpatrick for reasons that were not clear. Can you comment on that?
Yes, no doubt. It was with Mr. Bunge, who, a bunch, as you would say, who came on behalf of one of the members of the Junta, Brigadier Lamidoso, in a goodwill mission. I had been informed of that. I had doubts about the possibilities, but I didn't want to say no to any effort. So I said, okay, let him go, let him talk to Mrs. Kirkpatrick. If anything good comes out, I would willingly back up that.
Was there a perception in Buenos Aires at that point that Mrs. Kirkpatrick had substantial influence on American policy with regard to the Malvinas?
We had the perception at that time, a very clear perception, that the State Department or the government was divided with the hemispheric people, if you may call it that way, on the one hand, on the one side, and the Atlantic people on the other side. And then Mrs. Kirkpatrick was the leader of the hemispheric group, and Mr. Weinberger and Mr. Haig were the leaders of the Atlanticist group. We had that perception, and this is why any mission to Mrs. Kirkpatrick was somehow welcome, even if I thought it was unorthodox, but if it could help, okay.
I'd like to go back now, if I could, actually to an earlier period, to a question that we skipped, and that is the Peruvian initiative, which you had just mentioned. That occurred at the very point when the United Nations mission was beginning. My question is, did this create confusion rather than assistance on the part of Argentina?
Not in me. I think that, as far as I remember, the Peruvian initiative began on the 1st of May, late in the night, or in the early hours of the 2nd of May.
Right.
I received here a call from my friend, the Prime Minister at that time in Peru, Mr. Ulloa, then the Foreign Minister called me, and he said that they were sending a telex, fax didn't exist, to General Galtieri from President Belaunte. I arrived early on 2nd May in the White House, in the Pink House, and as they showed me the telex, I said, well, I think it's a very good telex. I called it a very good papelito, and it was known as the papelito afterwards. El papelito era muy bueno, really, it was a very good papelito, and I said, okay, well, then Mr. Belaunde called, and Mr. Galtieri said, please talk to him, your people who believe in Iowa the technicalities of this. And I said, okay, I had two or three objections, but not any bigger objections. So the problem, and he said, and this was very interesting, this paper has been drafted by Mr. Haig and had been sent by Mr. Haig to President Belaunde, asking him to push it onto President Gantilevi. Well, that's very interesting. While I'm studying it, I am submitting my opinions to the President. The President will have to call a meeting of the Junta, but I think that this is a positive move. 10 or 14 minutes afterwards, President Belaunde called again, and again President Galtieri asked me to hold the conversation, and well, he said there is a very slight change, only one, or perhaps two, he said, but only one important, the other you will accept. And what's the change, Mr. President? The change is that in you will read in point 5 the word aspirations. Well, the British asked, the Brit, no, he said, I've been asked by Mr. Haig to change it for wishes. Mr. President, this puts an end to everything. But don't say that. How could you? Only a word. That's a word. And this is a proof also that the British know the document. No, I'm sure they don't. I'm absolutely sure they do. Because only the British could have asked Mr. Haig to change aspirations or points of view, because we had accepted points of view, which was quite good, or aspirations, but wishes, no. Because even if you go to the Concise Oxford and compare, probably wishes and aspirations and points of view are almost the same from a grammatical point of view. But from a diplomatic point of view, wishes had such a special connotation that meant a lot of things, a lot of unacceptable things. Wishes was a new word in the negotiations. It was not a new word in the negotiations.
No.
You follow me?
Yes, entirely.
Is it clear?
Absolutely.
Please ask me, if because between my 8 years and the and my English, I may incur a lot of mistakes. But,
no.
So, please.
I think your understanding of the word wishes is total.
So that was that. And then President Belaunde said, well, I will ask a change. Because again, I insist on this. Belaunde's proposition was a sound proposition, except for wishes, and for, I don't remember now, that it was a minor point. Do you remember? There was another minor point. No, another minor point was another point which was
minor.
Was
it the number of countries?
Yes, exactly.
I think it'd be
concerning the group of countries. Okay.
I think you did not want the United States to be.
Exactly.
But that was not important.
That was not important, and at the end I said, okay, let's the Uncle Sam come in, I will applaud him. But that was it. And there was nothing from Mr. Pérez de Cuellar till, and then at the moment the ball was on their side, because they had to say, okay, drop wishes and use that word.
Yes.
So, from our point of view, the document was accepted in principle, provided that wishes was substituted by another word.
Right.
Okay? Well, then the Belgrano incident took place. And at the same time, well, the junta decided to suspend negotiations. Roca called me, said, I have been invited by Mr. Pérez de Cuellos to visit him in his own department or flat, or how you call it, home. Can I go? Yes, you may, because talks has been suspended. But you must tell Mr. Pérez de Cuellos that there is this intervention. But that tell him too that negotiations have been suspended. He brought the first paper from Ambassador Pérez de Cuellos. He sent the paper. We immediately liked that paper.
Yes.
I asked Ross Candiotti their opinions on the paper, positive opinions. That was coming back. Again, the problem, the dispute will be in the hands of the United Nations. We like that from many points of view, even if we had some misgivings about the Security Council and veto powers. So, we didn't answer immediately because Belaunde's mission had not been yet to run in. But after the sinking of the Belgrano, because the call from Ambassador Pérez de Cuellos had been took place before the sinking of the Belgrano. You agree with that?
Yes. Yes. And the Secretary General was extremely disturbed then.
And I said to Roca, well, tell him that we are involved in this, but you must go. You cannot say no to the Secretary General's call. Perhaps I should have said no to Dr. Roca. But I feel now, and I felt at the time, that it was harmless, provided that he informed Pérez de Cuellos of Belaunde. But I think that Mr. Ambassador Pérez de Cuellos was somehow upset by the news about the intervention of, and he said so to me a year or a couple of years afterwards, the intervention of Belaunde, of which he didn't know anything. The first news were the information that Dr. Roca transmitted.
Yes.
Is this true?
Yes, this is entirely true. And you have clarified something I think that's important here, because one of the Secretary General's concerns was that there might be an impression because of this, the Peruvian nationality, that in fact the Peruvian initiative was connected with the Secretary General. But you have, in your response, made very clear that in Buenos Aires you knew where the initiative came from and that it had no connection with the Secretary
General. We never connected one to the other. On the contrary, if I may be very frank, and perhaps this could be one of the parts that can be excluded, we thought that there was a competition between Ambassador Pérez de Cuellos and President Belaunde. So we didn't know that. We said, we don't know who, if President Belaunde, knowing that Ambassador Pérez de Cuellos was going to begin a peace initiative, he tried before. All of that Mr. Pérez de Cuellar's pumping because he didn't want to live the things, the probable victory in the hands of Mr. Belaunde, having, as we thought at that time, he had ambitions about Peruvian presence.
That was not totally unsuspected in New York.
But anyhow, is this clear?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, if I may, I'd like to go on or back in a way to the British draft of May the 17th, which was a complete draft, and which in fact was released to the press very quickly thereafter, leaving aside the question of the wishes of the inhabitants of the Malvinas. What was your reaction to the British action on this complete interim plan that they suddenly produced?
This will be one of the secret parts to my reaction. Should have been a very happy one, no? But frankly, I was suspicious because of the whole movement. Why they left so suddenly? The only argument that we found for a change in the British position was what we thought could have been the pressure of the European Union. That's the only reason we proceeded. But we thought that Mrs. Thatcher is so diabla. How do you say that?
Devilish.
Yes.
Eh?
Devilish.
Yeah. She would produce a very cosmetic, you know, please that without changing its. My own reflections were, how at this stage, how could they say goodbye to the self-determination principle that has been the only problem in the discussion from the very beginning, 1965, till now. When Mr. Ridley was expelled from the House of Commons because of he dared to present the lease solution. So, but even then,